Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lob Podcast with These Football Times.
Once again, you will recognise the famous four, as I've now decided to call us. A slightly different role for Aidan, but that'll all become clear as we go on. First of all, welcome. Stephen, you okay?
Very well, Stu, very well. How's things your end?
Excellent. I'm really sorry. I know you've probably discussed this a lot, but and I promise I won't keep doing it every time we meet, but congratulations on the nomination.
Oh, thank you very much indeed. Yes, it's still a bit surreal at the minute. But yeah, it's, you know, setting out doing this and writing articles and books and all that. Never once thought it had come to this.
So nominated the Telegraph Football Book of the Year on a short list of six.
Short list of six, indeed. I think I said earlier in the day, I think I'll class myself as the Shed Seven amongst a litany of Oasises and Blurs and Prodigies, I think. But yeah, it's a humbling experience to be on that list anyway.
It is fine company that you are in, but obviously very, very much, very well deserved, shall we say, very much deserved. And I don't think you're out of place in any way, shape or form. Gary, welcome.
Thank you, Stu. I had my congratulations to Steve as well. And just to say, you know, all the people at TFT are so proud of you, buddy. And well-deserved, fantastic book. Just when you get up to the, I think it's real now, you wait till they call your name up, mate, and you've got to go and pick that statue up and make a speech, buddy.
Obviously, Gary, Aidan and I will be broadcasting live from the back of the room on a little separate podcast table as we talk everyone through the event as you go and collect it. But yeah. Aidan, welcome. First of all, the shirt, which again, will all become clear as we go along. How are you doing?
Doing very well, thank you, Stu. And just to add, I echo exactly what everyone said about Stephen's book, but I should point out I really liked Shed 7, so there you go. That's no bad thing at all.
Well, you can't lose.
There's no shame in being Shed 7.
So on this vlog tonight, let me say it's another slightly different series. So I'm just gonna ask you, Gary, to sort of explain a little bit behind the concept of this one.
Yeah, well, this series is basically called Football's Mount Rushmore. So you'll be familiar with the mountain in, I think it's in North Dakota, where they've got the images of four former presidents chiseled into the base of the mountain. So this is football's equivalent, and so we're going to invite a series of guests, which I think is going to be the first tonight, to talk about their favourite four players, a goalkeeper, defender, midfield player, and a forward. That should be forever immortalised. Can you not be forever immortalised? On Mount Rushmore that sits above that stadium, so these guys will forever be looking down upon the club for which they've given great service.
So, with regards to what Aidan will be picking and what the guests will be picking, then is it one from each position or?
Yeah, it's one. So one goalkeeper, one defender, one midfielder, and one forward. And when we were sort of discussing this with the guests coming, there's someone wanted to say, well, can I have two midfielders? No, you can't. You can't, just because it's my idea. So it's my game. It's my game, it's my rules.
Excellent. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, Darren. So obviously, as per usual, I get to piggyback on someone's great idea and just sit here and ask the questions and listen to you guys chat. Aidan, obviously you've picked four players from Notts County. So, which is gonna. So Aidan, first of all, then a little bit about yourself and a little bit about, first of all, the team that you've picked, but not the players that you've chosen.
Right. Well, I am part of the TFT crew, one of the senior writers, of course. The club I've gone to, if you've heard one of the My Side series from about a year ago or so. I did a My Side with you guys there, and that was all about Newcastle United in the mid-90s, the 1995-96 season, where it could so nearly have gone so right, but didn't. And that is the shirt I'm wearing tonight, of course. That's the best Newcastle shirt still to this day, without a shadow of a doubt. So I've gone for Newcastle United. The reason why, well, apart from being my side, this is where I grew up, this is where I live again now, having lived a few other places in between, but they are very much my team, even if my current support levels are not quite what they were in the 90s, to be brutally honest. But I'm probably not alone in that, people of our generation, perhaps. But they are still very much my side.
Okay, so Newcastle United, so one goalkeeper, one defender, one midfielder and one forward. Gary, this is your series. It's quite the challenge you've set the guests, really.
It is, and, you know, as I said, each of the guests I spoke to, you know, had a few difficulties, and, you know, Aidan's no exception. And when we get to the forwards, you know, there's probably no more, and there's no club more entranced by the number nine shirt than fans of Newcastle United. So when we get to that one, that'll be a real challenge. So fascinated to see which player Aidan has selected on the many, many, many options. I mean, they will all be interesting. Throughout the series, they will all be interesting. And people doubtless have sort of personal reasons why they went for this option rather than the other option. But this is what we're all about. So we're going to spend some time talking about football and people's choices.
Brilliant. It's a great concept, And Stephen, I suppose, carrying on from what Gary's just said there, Newcastle United, if ever, you know, obviously you're a Liverpool fan yourself, but if ever there's a club whose sort of hero worship of players, you know, at Newcastle United, you know, if you're in, you're in, you know, with the fans, and it's an unenviable task, shall we say, that Aidan's probably got on his hands tonight.
Oh, without a doubt. Newcastle are one of those clubs where, you know, if you rise to hero levels, then you are a deity almost. You know, it takes a certain personality to be able to succeed at Newcastle and to impress the fans. You know, and there is a common theme amongst, you know, Newcastle heroes, I'd say.
It's before we get your first choice in, so, you know, we'll start at the back with the goalkeeper. But just before we get your first name, how difficult was this?
Well, some harder than others. It's probably not a great mystery that it got harder the further forwards we got in the team. the you know, defensively, Newcastle have never been that renowned, at least not in more recent decades. Going back much further, they have, and there's a few names I can mention from way back in the past who had significant impact on defensive styles in football. But no, it definitely got progressively harder as I went forward through the team. Naturally, of course, as you say there, your own personal choices and so on, certain ones may be more geared to my era than some other people might. That's the first little spoiler, but, you know, plenty I can pick.
Okay, so we'll start with the goalkeeper. Who, I suppose this is quite a bizarre question, I apologise, but who, was it close or was it pretty straightforward? If it was close, who narrowly missed out?
Right, I think there was only two real choices I could go for in this category over the last 50 years or so, which was one of the other sort of initial rules that we had on this. So either that could have been Willie McFall, who was a stalwart of the late 60s and the 1970s. So he was part of the Bears Cup winning side. Grew into the early 70s as a player. He was then also a manager, actually, for a brief period in the 80s. He was less successful. He was obviously at the club for quite some time, very popular as well. But I didn't choose him, possibly because he had a good, strong defence in front of him. He had better protection than the goalkeeper I have chosen. But equally, both had great longevity at the club. Both had success of a degree. Both were crowd favourites, without a shadow of a doubt. So, yeah, Willie McFall is the one who's just missed out.
Okay, so in that case then, so who is the first face that Gary's going to have to start chiselling, the very first face that Gary's going to have to start chiselling on Newcastle United's Mount Rushmore?
Well, just a notch above Willie McFall would be Shay Given for me. So he was at Newcastle United for about 13 seasons in all. The vast majority is the number one pick. There was only a brief spell where Steve Harper was picked above him, more for infighting reasons than anything else, I think, although Harper was another good goalie, but not on the level of Given. He made almost 500 appearances for the club in that time, putting him third on the all-time appearance list for the club. Incidentally, as a quick aside, the person top of that list is another goalie, Jimmy Lawrence, but that was way at the beginning of the 20th century, so I don't know too much about that. But he did win a few titles, so that's... You know. Anyway, Given was... he was a fairly short goalkeeper, and he was always a bit maligned for that, although he wasn't quite as short as popular misconception would have you believe. He was 6'1", which to me isn't exactly small. But I guess in the world of modern goalkeepers, he looked a little bit shorter than some. But he was very agile, very quick reflexes, and he was an outstanding shot stopper. He was hugely athletic, made some absolutely outstanding saves in his time. Some might argue that he needed to, given the defence that was in front of him during some of his career at Newcastle. He did have to play behind Pettis Bramble for a time. But he exuded a calmness. Now, in amongst a team where the defence wasn't always that solid, as we say, to have somebody that dependable, that calm and that reliable behind you must give a huge degree of confidence to those in front of him, even if they weren't on his level always. But he exuded that calm. He rarely committed any significant errors. And this was obviously crucial given the defence in front of him. But even more than his ability, I would say he's elevated onto this level because of his love for the club as well. And this is where people that we're picking here sometimes get themselves up above others. Is he had a huge desire to stay on Tyneside despite offers that he got from elsewhere. He could have been playing much nearer the top of the table if he'd taken up some of the offers he had during his time in Newcastle. But he really loved it there. He wanted to stay. He wanted to win something with Newcastle, and obviously that wasn't to be. When he eventually did leave, he went to Manchester City, and this is before, slightly before they were in their current form, but he did win something with them, and all of Newcastle's fans, well, I can't speak for everybody, but the vast majority were delighted for him, that even though he hadn't won something, which would obviously have been the very best, he had won something, and he deserved it for the career and the time he'd given us, and all the great memories. So he's always going to be a true club legend. He was an outstanding goalkeeper, a hero for his loyalty as well as his ability. So I think he deserves it.
Okay, so Shay Given will be forever immortalised as the very first face on These Football Times Mount Rushmore. Gary, I suppose this is, you know, as we said at the beginning, this is a classic case of the relationship between player and fans. Obviously, there's the level of ability, you know, and Shay Given was an exceptional goalkeeper. But that relationship with the fans, it is also crucial when you're having discussions like this. You know, you can't ignore the relationship between player and fans either.
No, absolutely right. And, you know, it's fantastic that Aidan's just sort of gave that wonderful description of why he chose Shay Given. He chose Given because it's, you know, it's the affinity you have with a player, and that's what to me, in my mind, is what this series is all about. And perhaps, you know, as we go through the different episodes, and even the players in this episode, there'll be lots of different options, and people think, well, what about this guy? What about that guy? And the other player I thought might come into the reckoning with Aidan would be Pavel Cernicek, because he had a similar sort of affinity with the club. And there again, perhaps not the greatest goalkeeper, and a little bit eccentric at times, but certainly somebody who sort of took the club to his heart, and the fans seemed to take him to their heart as well.
It's
very much so. Yeah.
It's, I mean, Stephen, it's Shay Given, and I can't remember the site. I don't know if it wasn't Liverpool. I don't think it was Liverpool. My abiding memory of Shay Given is being man of the match, you know, and I'm sure it's a five. Aidan will know probably better than I do. I think it was a 5-0 defeat, or it was an incredibly heavy defeat that Newcastle United suffered, and Shay Given was the man
of the match.
There's
been a few of those, Stuart. I can't remember them all.
It's not narrowing it down, has it? Just one of those times. But yeah, Shay Given for me was one of those goalkeepers that I think probably every fan for a period of time coveted for their club.
Oh, definitely. And Shay Given's one of those that just everyone respected him. the way I describe it. He was, you know, everyone admired him as a goalkeeper. He was, like Aidan said, his agility and his reflexes were the thing that stood out most about Shea Given. He was very quick in his reactions. You know, you could have a player that was right in front of goal. He'd somehow pull out the right save, sometimes at point-blank range. And a fantastic six-yard box goalkeeper. Not sure about his all-round goalkeeping, as in being a penalty box goalkeeper, but I don't think he ever really got the chance to prove that theory wrong or right, because I think the teams he played for tended to look for a traditional six-yard box goalkeeper. You know, there's not many teams out there that actually ask the wider range of goalkeeping anymore. But as a shot stopper and a reflex goalkeeper, way up there with the best. I mean, I remember him at Blackburn Rovers, and he only never really made it at Blackburn Rovers because Tim Flowers was in front of him. And it was Dalglish who'd taken him to Blackburn Rovers. And it was Dalglish who rated him that much that when the chance came to take him to Newcastle, he jumped at her as Newcastle manager. But I do remember like a short spell, a half loan season down the coast at Sunderland that he had, and he won promotion with them. And it was there that he proved what he was capable of, that he could be more than just a backup goalkeeper. And I think Newcastle just, they were in exactly the right place at the right time. And to get a goalkeeper like Shea Given and to be able to have him for as long as they could, it was probably one of the most un-Newcastle things imaginable. Because, you know, I don't mean that in a disparaging way to Newcastle United, but as Aidan had stated, you know, when it came to kind of like rivals here for Shea Given to take that role, you can't think of too many dependable long-term goalkeepers that Newcastle had. Cernicek was a great goalkeeper at times, but erratic enough to lose his place over and over again. He would swap and change with Shaka Hislop, who was another promising goalkeeper that just couldn't keep his place for a long period of time. His form would dip and they'd alternate. But Shea Given, apart from that spell with Steve Harper, he was pretty much undisputed at Newcastle for such a long period of time. Mm. And Given was that good to the point that I remember being amazed that he didn't play the 99 Cup Final, for instance. You know, he was just, he was too good not to play a Cup Final. And I know he'd fallen out with Rod Hullett, who'd been the manager at the time of the 99 Final. But it just seemed like, you know, cutting your nose off to spite your face by not having one of the best goalkeepers in the league, in the country, between the sticks for an FA Cup Final.
And I mean, you know, before we move on, and I'm really sorry, because I know this, I'm fully aware this is a celebration of your side, but it was a 5-1 defeat to Liverpool at home in 2008. I've just brought the match report, and both managers comment on how outstanding Shea Given was and how it could easily have been 10-12-1.
Remember that one.
Yeah, were it not for Shea Given. So, good that you've picked a goalkeeper that conceded 5 at home as Newcastle United, which I suppose indicates how difficult the choice was. But no, for me, I think, you know, a consummate professional, you know, like we say, somebody that every club, that, you know, a fan of every club, he was, like I say, a keeper that would be coveted. And to have such consistency in that position for such a prolonged period of time is, like I say, makes him a very worthy first addition for Gary to get chiseling.
Now, Stu, if I'd had to avoid players who'd played in heavy defeats for us, I wouldn't have picked anybody.
This is true. It would have been. So that all being said, what a great link, Aidan. We now come to a defender. Who did you leave out? Was it close? Was this as difficult as the goalkeeper?
Well, you talk about affinity, and if I'd gone with affinity, I'd have picked Philippe Albert from the team in the 90s. You know, he wasn't so much a sort of robust defender, and I think he liked to attack as much as anything else. But he was nominally a defender, and he was cultured and classy. And of course, he scored that wonderful chip goal over Peter Schmeichel that we can never forget in Man United's heavy defeat.
He could have gone just on that.
But no, I think that the choice here, even though this was somebody from a little further ago, not in my time, I think the status at the club goes without saying in terms of what he achieved and the defensive strength.
So, I mean, you know, Gary, it's difficult, isn't it? No, I don't mean it's difficult for Newcastle United fans. I just mean sometimes it can be tricky. Some clubs, some people, some guests, some clubs will find it trickier, I suppose, in a variety of positions. But as Aidan mentioned right at the beginning, trying to find a defender for Newcastle United is going to be... But one that's going to be in such illustrious company was always going to be difficult.
Yeah, it was. And I was obviously, you know, as we sort of... last couple of hours, we've been thinking, who else could I pick? I mean... I think Aidan, the guys Aidan's picked is a little bit before his time, but it's not before mine. You know, I remember this guy playing. I remember him scoring the rare goals at the crucial time in Newcastle history, and he's got a distinction of being the last guy to do something in Newcastle's history as well. Absolutely old-fashioned defender, centre-back when they were called centre-halves. a solid Scottish defender that every successful club seemed to have in those days, and this guy almost epitomised that position.
So, Aidan, then you're the second face that Gary now needs to get to work on for Mount Rushmore. Who is your greatest defender of choice?
Not only the greatest defender, but also the last captain for Newcastle to actually lift a meaningful piece of silverware that wasn't a lower league title. It's Bobby Moncur. So he's another club legend. He's still involved with the club today in an ambassadorial role. And as a quick aside, he lives next door to my brother-in-law. Oh. Shout out to them. But he was an absolutely outstanding and inspirational captain for Newcastle United. So this is through the 60s and into the early 70s again, as we mentioned with William McCall. But Bobby Moncur was... the rock of the defence in front of McFall there, and he was, you know, and he was an archetypal rock, so he's perfect for Mount Rushmore, of course. He's a real leader at the back, an undisputed club legend. So he was in an era of fairly brutish one-dimensional defenders, as Gary was saying, you know, it was a bit more robust in those days, but he was composed and classy as well as able to get stuck in a bit. He could read the game superbly well. He wasn't particularly known for his scoring, but as Gary alluded to, he did contribute some vital goals in his career. He only scored 10 times for Newcastle, but some of those were hugely significant. He scored three in the two legs of the Fairs Cup final victory in 1969, which might make it into a book that Stephen's writing at the moment, hopefully. and he was the captain that lifted that trophy as well. So, glad to hear it. So, yeah, while that bit's not to do with defending, it cements his legendary status all the more. Cool. His longevity as well, we talk about Shea Given's longevity. Moncur had that too, as well as his successes in his case and the leadership qualities. I think others who could have picked in similar era or overlapping slightly and going into the 70s would have possibly been Frank Clark, another long-time servant of the club. But, you know, all these others are a notch or two below Bobby Moncur in terms of their abilities and the successes that they brought Newcastle United, which is quite a rare thing. So I may as well milk that for all I can on here, because we're not going to have this kind of success to talk about with many of the others. So Bobby Moncur gets it for all of those reasons.
It's a great point. I mean, I was going to ask you as well. You know, as this series sort of, you know, as we progress and develop and people come on, it's going to be interesting. Players, where there is association with success, you know, and Aidan's just given a great example there, especially with, again, a club like, and this isn't to pick on Newcastle, this is a celebration of Newcastle United. But it's that association of success lifting trophies is gonna be hard to sort of separate that out from the choice of truly great footballers who maybe didn't win anything with the club.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. But it's a massively personal thing. You know, you can, as we'll see as we go through this series, you'll look at things. You think, well, why this guy? Why not that guy? But it might be games that you watched, it might be games that you attended, it might be big, important derbies that's or against teams that you sort of always want to beat. It might be that those 5-0 victories over Manchester United, mate, that you mentioned earlier, that sort of cements the players like Albert and Ferdinand in the sort of minds, magic memories. I think so. It's always difficult to sort of predict who people are going to pick, which is one of the reasons why I sort of I think this is going to be such a fascinating series.
It's funny, actually. I mean, Stephen, it's going to be interesting as well, especially... football evolves. We talk about it all the time. You know, football constantly evolves. Sometimes it's the same idea, just done in a slightly different way. But in terms of I would argue that no position has changed as much as the archetypal centre half. What was allowed and what is now allowed. They're almost playing two completely different games, and it's going to be interesting which era people pick from for this particular position.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's that concept of, the traditional, certainly if we talk about British teams as well, the traditional British stopper against the ball-playing centre-back. I mean, it's also quite an era-defining shift in emphasis, because you still had the traditional stopper-type defenders. I mean, even now you could probably identify one or two here and there, Maguire at Man United. He's more of a rock type of defender, rather than a ball-playing defender, perhaps. Certainly at Liverpool, we had Martin Skrtel, up until relatively recently, who was very much a man-mountain type of defender, whereas your ball-playing central defenders, the ones who can spray the ball around, bring the ball out of defence with the ball at the feet. Yeah, it will be interesting to see who picks what type of defender and what era they come from, because there is that, it's not like a line in the sand, the mix, Liverpool are, we'll go back to, because it's my team and I know who are watched and who grew up, being told about and learning about. So Liverpool had that concept of Emlyn Hughes, who could use the ball, dropped into central defence as he got older, and he would bring the ball out of defence. So Liverpool then carried on doing that type of thing with Alan Hansen and Mark Lawrence and so on and so on. But there would still be, a tough stopper defender, a Larry Lloyd or anything like that. And that's where I'll be fascinated to see, that crossover of eras and styles. And going back to Bobby Moncur, I've always known the name without knowing much about the style of play. He played in the 1974 FA Cup final against Liverpool. It was his last game for Newcastle, I think. And it's a name I've always known of without knowing too much about the player. But I think he's the right choice for Aidan's collection.
Brilliant. Okay, so. Maybe it starts to get a little bit, I won't say easier or trickier, I suppose easier, you've got more to choose from, trickier, I suppose, actually, now it's starting to narrow them down, Aidan. So we'll move further up the field, and now we come to midfield. A couple of names maybe that came close?
Yeah, well, I was a bit conflicted here, because there's quite a lot that I could choose. I even toyed with claiming Peter Beardsley was an attacking midfielder rather than a forward. And he did play in that position at times. He was slightly more withdrawn at Newcastle, especially in his second spell, but that really is a deep-lying striker. That would have been slightly cheating. Others could have gone for, there's famous names such as Chris Waddle and Gascoigne in the 80s, of course, but neither of them had their prime years at Newcastle, even though they came through at the club. They didn't last long enough, really, to warrant mention in that level. Probably a bigger hero, again, slightly before my time, would have been 1970, another long club legend. Any of those were quite up to the level in terms of hero status, certainly as the one I have picked. Also, Gary Speed was another one I gave serious consideration to. He'd been at the club quite some time as well. A big hero of the club, scored all sorts of great goals, usually with his head. He was such a powerful header of the ball. Again, another one who had some of his best years at Newcastle United and gave great service to them, is always fondly remembered, but probably not as fondly as the one I have picked.
So the one... Well, I'll let you say, who it is that you've picked. And I'm quite interested for you for the reasoning why, because I can't decide whether, obviously with being in midfield, I can't decide whether it's to supplement the really good things that Newcastle are well known for or to try and at least help out a little bit. for all the ball things that Newcastle United are known for. So, like I say, I think for this one, I'm really interested in your rationale for this player. So, who have you picked for your midfielder?
Favorite player in any position, Mile Time Newcastle United. Narrows Ferdinand, it would be Robert Lee. He was a terrific all-round player. He was an integral part of the rise, as well as the biggest heights of the Keegan era team. He joined during the promotion season for just £700,000 from Charlton, having been convinced that by Keegan and McDermott that Newcastle was closer to London than Middlesbrough, which was his other option at the time. But never mind about that. I suppose technically, if you get a plane, it's quicker. There you go. But I mean, he was such an integral part of the team. He was the sort of driving force, a little bit of solidity, but it was his surges forward that are the most memorable aspects of his game. The way he supported those in front of him, especially some of the more swashbuckling style of play that was going on all around him, but he fitted in perfectly. He blossomed from what had been a second division player initially into an international who could have been a more regular international than he was. I think he was probably a bit unlucky given some of the other players around at the time for England that he didn't get a bit more of a look in. But as a Newcastle fan, we're not really so fussed. It's what he did for Newcastle that's the more important thing. And he was such an integral part of the Keegan era heyday. Eventually, to add to the legend, of course, he lost his place and then even lost his squad number under Ruud Gullit, who talked a bit about Shay Given losing his place in a cup final because of Gullit's internal wars. Shearer also lost his place in a very iconic derby defeat to Sunderland, which was Ruud Gullit's last game. So too, Robert Lee didn't even make the squad under Gullit. So he picked his battles against some of the very popular characters at the team. And in a way, given the way everything turned out, that merely served to enhance their status with the fans, I think. He chose to stay at the club and fight his way back despite not having a squad number and not really being part of the setup. And of course he did. He became invigorated again under Bobby Robson, and that just adds to the appeal, of course. So he'll always be held in the highest esteem in Newcastle. Some of the earliest highlights was a hat-trick of headers that he scored in a UEFA Cup tie away in Antwerp in the early 90s, which was Newcastle's first campaign back in Europe for quite some time. But that was hugely iconic for Newcastle fans that he did that in a big 5-0 defeat in our first UEFA Cup match for quite a number of years. And it became the backbone of that swashbuckling side that developed in those years. Pitched in a decent number of goals too. Some vital ones, that I guess the other standout moment was his bullet header in the FA Cup semi-final in 2000 against Chelsea, given the pains that we'd had in the cup finals in the two preceding seasons, failing to score and, in fact, failing to turn up, really, on both occasions. And, you know, we were up against teams going for the double, that's the mitigation, but we didn't really turn up. So the following season, in a Wembley semi-final against Chelsea, for a brief moment when he bulleted that header in and made it 1-1, we all believed again for a moment, but it wasn't to be, but never mind. But his overall contribution to the club was absolutely huge. So he's another true legend, I have to say, my favourite player of my time following this club.
Okay, so it's a great story. We now need to tread carefully. He's the guest and he's his most favourite player of all time. So we can be only anything but supportive on this one. But, you know, a great, again, one of those players that fans just cover. You know, they look almost on from afar with envious eyes at players like this.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I'm sure this is going to be a recurring theme, that fans reward loyalty and dedication and longevity to club. And, you know, I mean, then again, thinking about alternatives, you know, you could think of players like, you know, I mentioned Gascoigne or Ginola, Laurent Robert, those are the players, Chris Waddle, and probably wouldn't be as skillful as any of those players. But that's not what this is about. What this is about is what players mean to fans of clubs. And I can absolutely understand where Aidan's coming from when he says about Rob Lee and how he not only sort of was committed to the club for a long time, but even when he was being messed about by Gullit, he still came back and still gave yeoman service to the club. So I absolutely understand. And, you know, I can appreciate why Aidan says, you know, he's his favourite player. He's not the best player. It doesn't matter. but it's what they give of themselves as well.
I mean, I suppose, you know, Stephen, you know, coming to, you know, these sorts of players, you know, and as Aidan's, you know, alluded to throughout this, to be fair, you know, Newcastle have struggled and had the highs and lows, and it, and sometimes, you know, as fans, you look to players almost to sort of re-centre you and to re-centre your club, or to give fans a sense of well-being in what can be quite foreboding situation. You know, if you have players like Rob Lee and they're starting, sometimes it can just, even that can be a calming influence, just to see their name on the team sheet before the ball's even been kicked.
Yeah, they become a centre point of the team. You know, they you know, it's that classic foundation. I fully subscribe to how good of a player Robert Lee was. You know, I admired him massively. Thought he was unlucky at times, you know, on the international scene. You know, it was pretty criminal that he didn't make the England squad for the 96 European Championships. He'd had a fantastic season. I think he made the PFA Premier League team of the year that year. Very, I'd say, underrated by fans of other teams. You know, I think he was one of those type of players that would ghost into games and ghost in and out of games, but he would have these flash points, really important flash points, be it through ball, a late run, you know, a bullet header, you know, a fantastic shot from distance. Some of the goals he scored from distance were beautiful. You know, he's a very intelligent player, you know, and he's one of these that doesn't get the credit he deserves in the wider scope of football. Fully understand how Newcastle fans adore him. And yeah, you know, he could play on the right-hand side of midfield at times, but in the centre, he was just majestic. There was something, you know, very, very, again, going back to my own team, but quite Liverpool about him in that box. It reminded me a lot of Terry McDermott in many respects. You know, I adored Terry McDermott as a Liverpool player, and I get where Aidan's coming from in saying like Paul Gascoigne and a Chris Waddle was that their peak years were elsewhere. Makes total sense why Aidan is picking Rob Lee here, because Rob Lee's best years were in a Newcastle United shirt, and that will be an absolute precious thing. And, you know, yeah, just such a shame that he, you know, fell short in that chase for the league title in 96. Not only because of who won it in the end, but just how good that Newcastle side was. And they, you know, of all the teams that deserve to have come up with a trophy, but not to, you know, I don't think you can come up with as many, you know, comparable to that Newcastle side.
It feels like a tale of woe, Aidan. Self, and I'm aware this is supposed
to be an artistic tale of woe, though. a very aesthetically pleasing tale of woe.
It is. It's beauty. It was beautiful to watch as a neutral.
Yeah, Tino Esprilla in there as well. So.
So I mean, Aidan. I mean, you know, we come to obviously the sharp end, shall we say, of the programme. You know, it's the sharp end of the team. It's, you know, as we mentioned right at the start, you know, the number nine shirt is, you know, this is probably, if you want to associate a number with a club, and certainly, you know, Newcastle United, the number nine shirt, for me, just go together hand in hand. So was this tricky?
Massively so.
Good.
So having said, when talking about Robert Lee, having said that he was only a notch above Les Ferdinand in my affections really as a player, I was of course very tempted to pick Ferdinand, but I haven't. So this is where I'm massively conflicted. And it probably goes to the fact that Ferdinand only played two seasons with Newcastle in the end. It feels like a lot longer when you think of him in that heyday and that pomp of that side. But yeah, only two seasons versus the service that the player I have chosen has given. It's a bit hard to sort of choose Ferdinand based on that. But having said that, he was without doubt one of my all-time favourite players at Newcastle United, and is again massively popular. Anytime he came back to Newcastle with Tottenham in the later years, he was always applauded to the rafters. He's such a hero on Tyneside, even though he was only there for a relatively short period. But there was plenty of others I could have picked too, to reel off a few lists. If we'd been able to go back a bit further in time, of course, the people who started off the famous number nine shirt myth for Newcastle, I guess, would be there's people like Hughie Gallagher back in the 20s who scored goals for fun, won titles as well, believe it or not, for Newcastle. There was Jackie Milburn, of course, in the 1950s, who won the FA Cup three times and scored a hatful of goals, including what was at the time the fastest cup final goal. And going further forward, you've got Malcolm McDonald in the 1970s, Super Mac as he was known, who is, of course, a massively iconic figure, and he's still involved in and around Newcastle as well, on local radio a lot of the time. And is still, of course, a big fan of the club, even though he's not from the region, but he's got such a connection and affinity to it. But he's another one I could have picked. You could carry on a bit further. There's Kevin Keegan as well as a player. He galvanised the club as a player, as he later would do as a manager. But again, his stint was relatively short. It was only two seasons as a player. And yet, the impact he had was huge. I could have picked Andy Cole, who was another key figure in the rise of the club in the early Keegan years. There's some cult figures I could have picked. There's Asprey, as had a mention, as a great forward. If I was feeling particularly vindictive, I could have gone for Shola Amiobi, who frequently scored against Sunderland and beat them so many times you wouldn't believe. But no, he's a cult hero, shall we say, in the manner of, you mentioned Pavel Cernicek earlier. I'd class him as a cult hero. Albert, Ginola, in the other positions, I'd say Amiobi is that rather than a great striker. So having said all of that, the person I've gone for is Alan Shearer. Now, this may seem a bit predictable, I guess, rather than some of the slightly more obscure, well, I wouldn't say obscure, but slightly more personal picks, for example, Robert Lee. But you have to think back to when he joined the club in 1996. This was for a world record transfer fee at the time. It was £15 million. This was earth-shattering to us that this happened. We just managed to lose the league title, of course, in the dramatic circumstances at the end of 1996. And then what do? We go out and break the world record for a Geordie player who'd escaped the club as a youth and been taken off elsewhere. The club at that time weren't so great at keeping local talent. He'd come through Southampton and Blackburn, but he was very much in his prime. And at that time, he was, without doubt, one of the best strikers in the world. He was obviously a very robust style, and styles changed, and he had to adapt as well. But at that time, the physical, very powerful, aggressive striker was very much the primary role at that time, and that's what he did. Injury would, of course, hamper him a bit during his time, in fact, quite significantly so. He missed huge chunks of time, which makes his scoring record all the more remarkable, I think. He's of course, frequently cited as the Premier League's all-time top scorer, but that doesn't even count all of his goals that he scored in the top flight, as he scored a few for Southampton pre-Premier League. But at Newcastle, he is far away the top scorer. He scored 206 goals for the club, most of which seemed to be hit with such brute force that nobody could have stopped them. And you see them in your mind's eye. They're all Exocet missiles flying into the goal from all sorts of angles. There was nothing subtle about him and nothing subtle about his style, but it was effective and it was dominant at times, and it was heroic to all Newcastle fans. And of course, he often goes on about how he's just a sheet metal worker's son from Gosforth, which is the area of Newcastle I live now. And he'd never forgotten his roots, and this is of course why he chose to return to Newcastle. He could have gone to Manchester United, and this was, as we've already mentioned, the time when Man United were maybe not quite reached their loftiest peak, but they were well on the way. They just pipped us to the league title. They would go on and win it again the next season, win numerous more trophies. He could have won all sorts with them, and I'm sure he was tempted, but he wanted to join the club that he dreamt of playing for. And to a fan of Newcastle United, when a player does that, even though, of course, at the time Newcastle were one of the best clubs in the country when he did join, but they soon weren't, let's be honest. But he always maintained that he never regretted his choice, that he always wanted to come and play for his club. He lived his dream, if you want to look at it that way. His dream wasn't necessarily to go wherever the trophies were. He wanted to play for his club, and this was his chance. And he made himself a big hero. Some of the most spectacular goals he's scored, I mean, he's scored all sorts of hat-tricks. The very best, I think, was a few years later down the line. It was a volley goal against Everton at St James's at the end of 2002, which just flew into the corner from the edge of the penalty area. A very famous famous goal on various clips of Premier League goals. But he scored several in exactly the same manner. He scored similar goals against Chelsea and Tottenham, from what I recall. He scored five against Sheffield Wednesday in Bobby Robson's first match, which was a nice 8-0 victory to lift us off the bottom of the table. Not many bottom of the table sides win 8-0. That was only a few weeks or so after he'd been abandoned on the bench by Ruud Gullit in that game I referred to earlier, the defeat to Sunderland when Ruud Gullit risked everything on his power struggle and lost. Shearer's first year, of course, he was there with Les Ferdinand, and this was a glorious time. The two of them, they were both, of course, goal scorers and both strong physical strikers, both excellent headers of the ball. You would think that they would get in each other's way, that they wouldn't gel together, but they did, and they had a great partnership, albeit a brief one. When Ferdinand left the following season, it was just our luck that Shearer got injured the very next day or even later the same day, and the first of many significant injuries he had in his time at Newcastle. But as a result of those injuries, his style had to change and adapted, and Bobby Robson was a key to all of that. He got Shearer to play in a slightly different way, I think more slightly withdrawn, but relying on the pace of his partner, Craig Bellamy, at the time there. And again, this is another unlikely pairing. Craig Bellamy and Shearer didn't necessarily always get on, but you don't have to. They got on perfectly on the field. You had the power and strength of Shearer, who was losing his pace, of course, by this time. But then he had Bellamy, who was just a bundle of energy and pace. And they worked together perfectly in tandem. He just remained a ruthless goal scorer for the whole time, despite injury taking its toll. When I was lucky enough to be there, even though I didn't live in Newcastle at the time, but I was there when he scored his record-breaking goals for Newcastle to beat the all-time scoring record. And it had been something that it had taken a few games to actually get to. So it had been on the cards for a little while. And when he did it, you could sense the relief on his part. But there was also relief and the adoration of the crowd of just witnessing a local hero doing what he'd always dreamt of doing, doing it in the black and white at St. James's at the Gallagher end, and living his dream. And that's why you get drawn towards these local heroes for these kind of reasons. And yes, he personally could have succeeded better elsewhere, and Newcastle didn't turn out to be the club that he thought he was joining, because they were joining when they were near the top, and, you know, they sunk much lower during his time there, but that wasn't for the want of trying. And he'd always remain a hero. And he's always shown then and still shows now that at his heart, he's a fan of the club, just like the rest of us. So as well as all the goals, that's another prime reason.
I'm not going to lie, if I sit here and squint, and in that top, you've actually got a bit of a look of me, maiden. And if I just narrow my eyes, it's almost like I'm talking to him. I see what you've done. You know, it's funny, you know, Aidan mentioned there, you know, about being a throwback, and we've talked, you know, Aidan talked about Bobby Moncur and, you know, and the traditional sort of centre half and that era that he was choosing from. But Alan Shearer, to me, and again, part of it, I suppose, is how he had to change his game, but he, you know, Aidan's right, you know, he's a real throwback. To the era of big, strong, physical, imposing strikers at a time where it was starting to change and the role of the striker was starting to change.
Yeah. Before we just address that, before Aidan let Aidan go, I need to turn around and see what he's got in the back. He's got nine Williams on his back, and we're going to have a little discussion. Now, I mean, but you're right. Now, I mean, what Shearer was in his pomp was a leader of the line. And, you know, he formed that role magnificently for Newcastle. And as I said earlier, you know, there's this massive affinity Newcastle have with the number nine shirt. It's, you know, Manchester United bought the seven shirt that Cantona had, or the seven shirt that Liverpool, that Keegan had, and Dalglish had. But at Newcastle, at St. James's Park, it was the number nine shirt. And if you can wear that and excel, and if you can be a local boy, and if you can come for a world record transfer, if you can play your socks up and score the goals that this guy scored, you're going to be a god there. And you know, Alan Shearer was the nearest thing to a deity that Newcastle have probably had in recent times. It's interesting that I thought you might have gone from Malcolm McDonald, who was obviously a bit earlier, but Obviously, he hadn't got a lot of those credentials that that Shearer had. But there again, he was a prolific goal scorer as well. And but I think one of the joys this series is going to be listening to people wax lyrical about their favourite players. And you know, Aidan has just gone off on one there for a while. That was it's great to listen to.
Like I say, it is. And this is why I guess you know this is why we like doing these things, and we, you know, having guests on, and you know, and the passion that comes out, you can't replicate it, you can't force it, you can't script it. It just, you know, it just comes out. I suppose, you know, for you, Stephen, before we sort of finish and conclude, and you know, we'll give the final word to Aidan. But Aidan mentioned something there, but you know, about how Shearer changed the way he played the game, and you know, and for a player to completely not redefine who they are, but redefine the way they play the game to either extend their career or maintain the impeccable standards takes a real level of intelligence to, especially when you're playing at the highest level, and defenders and clubs, you know who you are and what you're about. But to be able to change and adapt is probably something that's ever societally missed when people talk about Alan Shearer. Is his football intelligence?
Yeah, it takes a certain type of player to be able to reinvent themselves. You know, to lose something that is so intrinsically part of their game. You know, if you think about the Blackburn Alan Shearer and how many goals he ran on to score, you know, he would attack from deep and he would cover a lot of ground before hammering the ball past a dispiriting goalkeeper. A lot of his Blackburn goals weren't transferable to Newcastle once that injury kicked in. You know, if you look at some of the goals, like that Everton goal that Aidan mentioned, I don't think he scored too many like that in a Blackburn shirt. You know, he's absolutely correct, is that there was an adaptation, an alteration in the way that he played. And, you know, Bobby Robson was a huge part in that. You know, he seemed to hang off the shoulders of not just a defender, but like an entire defence. You know, how many of those goals, those classic goals, come from about the, you know, the 16 to 20 yard area? You know, there was a massive amount of intelligence in Shearer and the power and control in that as well. You know, he was, as strikers go, you know, you talk about predatory strikers, you talk about, you know, penalty box pickpockets, those who steal goals like a Gary Lineker or, you know, a John Aldridge, you know, a Mickey Quinn, who was another one that Aidan could have picked there if he was going cult hero, you know. But Shearer was just absolutely devastating, you know, and there's not many that you can compare him to in contemporary terms. He was like a hammer as a striker. The accuracy and the power in his shot was just majestic. But he also had the subtlety. I can't remember who it was he scored the one against, but I remember one where it was a cross-field ball into the penalty area, and he guided it in on the volley with the inside of his right foot, and it was a beautiful finish. You know, he was one of these. He had such a range of skills that, yes, so much was about that power, that devastation, but there was so much more to him. He was absolutely imperious. And you think of the players that he kept out of the England side. You know, you look at a raw talent like Robbie Fowler, who at the peak of his powers sat on the bench on international duty watching him. And Fowler was a player whose, you know, his finishing capabilities and skills were compared to Jimmy Greaves. You know, there were so many others. You know, if Newcastle effectively, you know, can cash in a Les Ferdinand and an Andy Cole and for an Alan Shearer, you know, what an absolute player that man was.
I mean, it's great, Aidan, that we started with the goalkeeper and finished with the number nine and didn't go the other way around. How do you feel then, first of all, about, obviously, you know, this is Gary's series, you know, it's Gary's idea, but, you know, you're the one who sort of put the first four names up there, and, you know, and long will they be there now for Newcastle United, because I highly doubt we'll get another Newcastle United fan on to also talk about, and I can't see many people disagreeing with your choices either. So, you know, you are the man who's sort of put that Newcastle United Mount Rushmore in place. Can you see anybody coming along? Will Gary have to wipe one clean and put another one up, or do we think that one's set for a few years?
I don't think there's any imminent threat. Let's put it that way. Perhaps if a certain Saudi takeover happens, you never know. But, you know, let's not get into that dubious morality. I think the only current player that, if they were to stay long-term, could reach certain status would be the goalkeeper, Dubravka, at the moment. He's an excellent keeper. However, I very much doubt that he'll have the longevity that that Shea Given had. That's just the way of it these days. But no, we'll see. But I mean, he's an excellent player. You might again say that he needs to be in the current team. He's frequently man of the match in some defeats, as we've mentioned before. It's a recurring theme for Newcastle keepers. But I don't think there's many others in the current setup or coming through that might reach that. I guess in terms of local heroes, you're looking at the Longstaff brothers would be the ones who, if they were to remain in the club, kicked on, that could reach this kind of status. They're the type of player that draws the attention. They've already, both of them have scored key goals in their brief spells with Newcastle, but both of them are also being mooted with various moves as well. So we'll see what happens there. But they are great talents, great local players who fought their way through and have the ability to reach this kind of status if they remained and Newcastle kicks on. We'll see, I guess, but they're probably the best shout right now.
Okay. So for you, Gary, obviously, you know, once you've finished chiselling up Alan Shearer, your work there is done. If you need a template, just have a look above you at Aidan. You can't go far wrong. Copy that. Stephen, thanks ever so much for joining us as always.
Yeah, joy as always, Stu.
Aidan, thank you, Aidan, Alan. There's only a letter in it, isn't there? There's only a couple of letters in there. Thanks ever so much for joining us and obviously for such an impassioned discussion that hopefully, if Les Ferdinand is watching it, I'm sure he'll be really, really happy. If Ruud Gullit's watching it, probably not so happy. But, you know, thank you for sort of being guest number one on this series and getting us off to a great start.
You're welcome. You're lucky I'm not going to sing us out with a rendition of Blade and Races, so let's just leave it there before I do.
And finally, Gary, happy with episode number one? You know, like I said, this is your idea, your brainchild. It's, you know, a good start.
Brilliant, brilliant. We know to have a Newcastle fan and passionate fans, it's always going to be a great episode. And, you know, I'm sure the others are going to follow, but couldn't have a better guy to kick the series off. So fantastic. Thanks, Aidan. I'm just going to nip down to the workshop now, get my chisel in the mouth. I should be done by the time we're next ready to record a podcast.
That's it. So, you know, please, obviously, join us again when Gary will once again be chiseling away on another Mount Rushmore. We just don't know which club yet, but please do join us again. Thanks and bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a Thees Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.